Parsha is Parsha Shemos. Storyline is that Torah opens that the Jews have been in Egypt now for just about 100 years. And Paro, together with his people, that the Jews are so successful, he decides to enslave our ancestors in Egypt. The Torah says that the beginning of the enslavement was, and this comes from the Midrash, that Paro himself put a brick mold, the mold that you make bricks in, around his neck. And he said, anybody who is would like to contribute to the welfare of the country should come and help us build the infrastructure of the country. And all of the Jews and all of the Egyptians started, except for the tribe of Levi. The tribe of Levi refused to get involved, and they remained free for that whole process, the Midrash says, the whole time of slavery. And one by one, in a very short period of time, not only did Paro himself, of course, not do any work, but the Egyptians themselves also dropped off, and the Jews remained slaves. It's a very interesting perspective. This Rashi quotes this Midrash, and Rashi explains to us that the slavery in Egypt was a decree from Hashem, except that if you wanted to opt out, it seems that you had the ability to opt out even while the slavery was going on. And in fact, the entire tribe of Levi, Paro himself exempted the tribe of Levi. According to some of the commentaries, he did it in order to give the Jews a certain group of sages. So some of the commentaries say that just like every people has a think tank, people who are involved just in thinking, just in philosophizing, and everybody supports them, the universities and the professors. They don't do the harsh labor. Everybody understands that you need to have an intellectual class, an elite class of intellectual people. Paro also allowed the Jewish nation to have this elite class of intellectuals, and this was the tribe of Levi. And the Rebbe points out that anybody who wants to be a Levi can be a Levi. And this is actually a ruling from Rambam. Rambam rules that even though the tribe of Levi is the only ones who are authorized to do the work in the Beis HaMikdash, and you can't just do the work just because you feel like it, or even if you are in fact very holy, but you can be on the level of Levi. You can be on the spiritual status of Levi. And this is a very important lesson right as we start the Parsha. And right as we begin to talk about the exile and the troubles in Egypt, because the word Mitzrayim, which is Egypt, means limitation, as you may be familiar. The word Meitzar in Hebrew, which is the root of Mitzrayim, is limitation, confines, something that blocks your ability to do and to grow as you would like to do and grow. And in fact, the Golos of Mitzrayim, the exile of Mitzrayim, is an exile that continues until today. We have still many troubles, and we don't see spirituality clearly. And we're all waiting for Mashiach to come, which we can talk about in a minute. The source in this week's Parsha, the discussion, very interesting discussion again with Moshe and Hashem. And the concept of going out of Egypt, which we're going to be reading about in this Parsha, the beginning of Hashem's promise, and the next few Parshas until finally we do leave Egypt. This idea of leaving Egypt is something that we need to be familiar with and thinking about every single day, and it becomes a mitzvah. Gemara says that it's important for a person to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim, leaving Egypt, every single day and also every single night, and that's why in the Shema, we actually add the third paragraph of the Shema. We read it morning and night to talk about the leaving of Egypt. Why is it so important to leave Egypt every single day to talk about it? Because the same mechanisms, the same modality, the same idea of constriction, confinement, and the same antidote, the same way to combat that as the Jews experienced in ancient actual country of Egypt, we are experiencing, and we're capable of having the Yetzias Mitzrayim, leaving these confines today, if we so choose. The difference is that in ancient Egypt, once the people were slaves, they could not leave until Mashiach came, until Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen by Hashem. Whereas today, we do have the ability to immediately stop being weighed down by the pressures of the world and to connect with the Torah. The Jews were not yet given the Torah during the time of Egypt. Today, we have the Torah. So again, the storyline of the parsha starts with the enslavement of the Jewish people, and it continues with the story of how Moshe is born. Moshe is put into a basket. He is rescued by none other, as you know, than Paro's daughter, Bitya. He's raised in the palace, and he's raised by his own mother. Very interesting parenthetic comment. The Torah tells us, and Rashi tells us this again, which means it's the literal interpretation. Rashi says that when Moshe killed the taskmaster, the story is, you may know, that Moshe goes out one day, the Torah says, and he sees that an Egyptian guy is beating up a Jewish guy. And this guy is like beating him really badly, worse, it seems, than ordinarily would happen. And Moshe goes and he kills the Egyptian guy and he buries him in the sand. Rashi says he killed him by using the Shem HaMeforash, Hashem's holy name. He killed him by somehow accessing spiritual energy. He didn't kill him by the ordinary ways of killing. Question, obvious question is, how did Moshe know the Shem HaMeforash? Where did Moshe have that information from? If Moshe was an Egyptian, raised in the Egyptian palace, raised like an Egyptian, how did he know it? And the answer, obvious answer, is that Moshe knew he was Jewish. He knew the Jewish mystical traditions. He was taught this by his mother and his father and his family. And they were from the tribe of Levi. And they always studied Torah. And we read this, in fact, that before Yaakov came down to Egypt, Yaakov established a yeshiva through Yehuda. And this yeshiva continued functioning for the tribe of Levi, at least, and any other Jew who wanted. But the tribe of Levi always studied Torah. And it's very interesting to note that Moshe was an incredibly spiritual person, even when he was being raised in the palace as, so to speak, Paro's, I guess, adopted son, so to speak. Moshe knew the Shem HaMeforash, Hashem's holy name. It puts a different light on the whole story later on when Moshe then has to run away because Paro wants to kill him for killing this Egyptian taskmaster. He runs away to Midian. And he gets married to his wife, Zipporah, the daughter of Yisro. And eventually, he does come one day to Har Sinai when he's 80 years old. He comes to Mount Sinai, which is in the Sinai Desert, off the edge of Midian. A little far from Midian, but in that area. And he sees the burning bush, the famous burning bush, and he has a conversation with Hashem, where, as Inna says, Hashem tells him, I will be what I will be, Eke Asher Eke. And Moshe tells Hashem, I don't want that you should choose me. He says, Shlachna biyad tishlach. Don't choose me. Send somebody else. Send the one who you are intending to send. In Hebrew, it's Shlachna, please send, biyad tishlach, and the one that you're going to be sending. And the Medrash says that Moshe was telling Hashem, I'm not the final Mashiach. Hashem, don't send me now. Send Mashiach, who is going to solve all the problems forever, and let that Mashiach come right now. In other words, don't have a two-step solution. Have a final solution, a one-step solution, in the good sense. Send Mashiach right now and solve all the problems. Hashem answered him, no, I want you, and you're going to do it. And they argued for 7 days. Gemara says, and at the end of 7 days, Moshe, of course, gave up, and he gave in, and he accepted the job. The Rebbe has a very interesting talk on this conversation between Moshe and Hashem. Why is Moshe saying, send Mashiach, and Hashem says, no, I want to send you? What's the difference? What is the same of Moshe and Mashiach, and what is the difference between Moshe and Mashiach? The Rebbe points out as follows. Few very beautiful ideas. Moshe, the gematria, the numerical value of Moshe, is Shin Mem He, which is 345. Moshe. Mashiach is Shin Mem Yud Ches, which is 358. What's the difference between 358, which is Mashiach, Gematria, and Moshe, which is 345? The difference is 13. 13 is the Gematria of Echad. Echad is one, unity. Echad, Aleph, Chet, and Dalet is 13. So therefore, Moshe Echad is the Gematria of Mashiach. Moshe bringing unity is the Gematria of Mashiach. Now, previously in last week's Parsha, which is Parshas Vayechi, we read that Yaakov gave a bracha to Yehuda. What was Yaakov's blessing, Yaakov's bracha to Yehuda? He says, Yehuda is going to be the one from whom the kings are going to come. And eventually, Yaakov says, there's going to be a king who's going to be Mashiach. He says, Ad ki yavo shilo, velo yikas amim. Until Shilo comes, velo yikas amim, all the nations will gather and be subservient and subject to Mashiach. Shilo is the name for Mashiach that Yaakov uses in last week's Parsha. The gematria of Shilo is the same as the gematria of Moshe. Shilo is Shin Yud Lamed, 340, plus Hey is 5, is 345, the same gematria as Moshe. So what was Yaakov saying? Yaakov was saying that Moshe really could be the Mashiach. And Hashem was selling this to Moshe. And Moshe was saying, I'm not the final Mashiach. Why? Because in order to be the final Mashiach, it's not enough to be Shin Mem Hey 345, which is the gematria of Moshe, gematria of Shiloh. You have to be Moshe Echad. You have to be the Echad, the one. What is the one? So we say every time we say the Shema, very famous, famous line, right? One of the most famous lines. Everybody knows a little bit about the davening, knows Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Listen, Jews, Hashem is one. And all of the commentaries, including the Kabbalists and the Mekubalim and Hasidic thought, asks, why does it say Hashem Echad, Hashem is one? It should say Hashem Yachid, Hashem is the only one, singular. There's nothing like Hashem. Hashem Echad means there is one God, but Echad is one in a number line. After one comes two, after two comes three. The famous joke is that the little kid asked the mother, every day we say, God is one, God is one, God is one. He said, this is going on for such a long time. When is God going to be two already? He's one for so many days. When is God going to be two? So that's a little kid talking, right? But we could ask the same question on the language of the Pasuk. This is a Pasuk from the Chumash, from later on in the book of Devarim. Now, Parshas Veschanan, it says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Why doesn't it say Hashem Yachid? Hashem is the only one, the singular one. And the Gemara asks this question. And the Gemara answers, because Echad really is a combination of three letters that have three different ideas, each one of the letters. Aleph means one, that's Hashem. Chet is 8, Gematria, and that's 7 plus 1, 7 heavens and the earth. Dalet is 4, and that's the four directions, east, west, north, and south. And that is all the directions. So it means Hashem is one, even though there appears to be a plurality. Even though we look around the world and we see 7 heavens and 1 earth, which means an entire universe, and all kinds of even spiritual levels, including the 7 heavens, angels, and all kinds of stuff. And there's all kinds of directions, northwest, southeast. Yet, it's all Hashem. Hashem is not only the power behind it, but it's all completely nothing. It's all doesn't exist. Hashem is the only true existence. Everything else is something that Hashem is constantly recreating, propping up, and doesn't have an existence of its own. It's all Hashem's existence. And that's what Moshe and Hashem were talking about. In other words, Moshe Echad means that Moshe teaches the world that the plurality that there appears to be in the world is fake news. It's phony business. It's not. There's no such thing as a world that is self-reliant, independent, able to stand on its own. It's all Hashem's energy. We take a look at a big, big world, and it's all Hashem. It's all Hashem's energy. And that's what, how do we have that? Where do we have that information from? And how do we have the ability to fully understand that? Only by learning Torah. So therefore, Moshe is the one who gave us the Torah. And Hashem tells Moshe like this. Moshe said, let it happen right away. I'm ready. As just mentioned, you know, Eke Asher Eke, I'll always be with them. And what's going to be in the future is right now. There's no change between now and the future, except in our perception. The reality of the world today, Hashem was telling Moshe, which is that there is only one, and I am the one, Hashem said, is the reality of the world in the future. The difference is going to be the perception of humanity. Humans will perceive the truth, whereas today they were in Egypt, or today we're in America, or wherever we are under the false impression that the world is a reality. And in fact, spirituality is the reality. The world is the non-reality, the mirage, the illusion, the hologram. It's not real. So this is what Moshe was telling Hashem, let it happen now because I'm ready. And Hashem answered Moshe, no, no, no. Mashiach is yet 13 numbers greater than Moshe. You must have the process is important. That means Hashem said, I could snap my fingers and bring Mashiach, but the world is not ready. The Jewish nation is not ready. It has to be in the language of our great Chachamim, it has to be avodah bekoach atzmo. It has to be the earning what you're getting, and not just receiving a gift. And in fact, in the language of the Zohar, it should not be nahama dechsufa, which means bread of shame. We don't want to get a handout. We want to earn. We want to work for this great, great, and glorious event that's going to be Mashiach coming and us realizing the spirituality. So again, Moshe said, give it to the Jews right now. Hashem said, no, they have to go through the process of receiving the Torah, going out into the world, eventually even getting into further exiles. And that's why Hashem said, Eke Asher Eke, I will be with them, Rashi says, I will save them from this exile. And I will save them from further galus, further exiles, any other tzaris that they have. So Moshe asked Hashem, do you really want me to say that to the Jews? That not only are they in trouble in hot water now, but even if they got out of this hot water, do you really want me to tell them there's going to be future troubles down the line? They can't take it. They can't take this trouble. Why should I tell them there's going to be future troubles? Why increase their anxiety, increase their sorrow? And Hashem said, you're absolutely right, Moshe. I never meant that you should tell this to the Jews. I meant that you should know it for yourself, that the reason that you are not the Mashiach right now is because there needs to be further galus. There needs to be further refining of the outside world. Not just Egypt needs to be refined. America needs to be refined. Russia needs to be refined. Ukraine needs to be refined. Europe, Africa, Australia. The entire world needs to be refined, and therefore the Jews, the language of the Gemara again, says the reason that the Jewish nation is exiled to the four corners of the world is not just the punishment, but it's also because we need to rectify, we need to elevate sparks of energy that are at all different places, and that's the refining of the world. In the language of the Aleinu prayer, L'takein olam b'malchut shin dalet yud, to fix the world, to repair the world by making the world realize that Hashem is the king of the entire world. So this is the process of Mashiach coming. The process is an elevation, a forming, making the world realize that Hashem is the power. It starts with this week's Torah portion, the book of Shemos. And it's very interesting that the parsha is called Shemos, which means the names. And it's not called, you know, Mitzrayim, it's not called Geula, it's just called names. And one of the reasons, many beautiful explanations on that, of course, it's one of the first words in the Parsha, so that's convenient, but still, why is it in fact the names? And the answer is because even if a Jew is only a Jew by name, and that's your connection to Judaism, meaning you don't have mitzvahs because you didn't do it for whatever reason, you don't have Torah knowledge because you never studied for whatever reason, but you're a Jew by name, that is enough. You have to believe and you have to be on the page, but it's about our what we are and what our essence is. And our essence is in the name. The name of the thing is its essence. And therefore, it talks about the ability of a Jew to elevate their surroundings. It's just because you are a Jew, because we have a neshama that Hashem gave us, and because we have a DNA that we inherited from our great ancestors. Just going through our life, of course, obviously we should study as much Torah as we can, do as many mitzvahs as we can, but for some reason we can't. Just being in a place also elevates. Just a Jew in a place just already elevates it. It's like if you take a flower, a beautiful rose or fragrant flower or some perfume, and you put it in a place, you don't have to do anything, just to be there. And all of a sudden, the whole place smells like that perfume because it is something that elevates the whole world. So that's the parsha. I shared with you two different thoughts about the discussion that Hashem had with Moshe, the difference between the ultimate coming of Mashiach after the world is already fixing itself up. That will be a final process that Mashiach will fulfill versus the Mashiach of Moshe, who started that process through teaching and giving us Torah and enabling us to elevate the world. And of course, the same along the same lines, I shared with you the idea of Mitzrayim being a limitation that is self-imposed in a certain way. So even though we don't have the clear choice and the ability just to, you know, have a Mashiach experience until Hashem brings us Mashiach, we do, however, have the ability to make our personal surroundings a Mashiach surrounding. If we so choose, we have total mastery over that aspect of our life. So we'll be living a spiritual life, a connected life, a life that is a plane higher than the regular world, or are we living a life that is subject to the world? That we have total mastery over. And I'll just conclude with a very short anecdote. They say there was one of the great tzaddikim that they once came and they told him very excitedly, there's noise in the street that Mashiach is here, Mashiach is here. He opened up his window and he said, nope, I don't see Mashiach. And the question is, how come he had to open up his window? Mashiach is here. He should have just in his room. And the answer is, in this tzaddik's personal space, he was always on the level of Mashiach. In his personal space, his personal space was always holy. The outside was the question, did Mashiach elevate the outside? And therefore, one of the beautiful messages, perhaps the most powerful message of this Parsha, is that we have the ability to elevate our personal space in that way. We have the ability to live a Mashiach existence even before Mashiach comes. And obviously, if we all do that, that's just going to make the real Mashiach, meaning the ultimate Mashiach, come that much quicker. So, many other beautiful concepts, but that is a little bit on the Parsha. If anybody wants, has a question, or more information, or just a more storyline. I didn't go into the storyline. I'm assuming that you ladies know the storyline more or less.
Yeah, I mean, thank you so much, Rabbi. You make it so clear. So just to reiterate, so the great Tzaddikim already lived with as Mashiach was here, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu actually probably already knew that Mashiach was there. That's why he said, why can't you just bring the real Mashiach, right? That was the question.
Moshe's level was always connected in the most intense way. Moshe was, as the Torah later tells us, the greatest of prophets, meaning he had Hashem in front of his eyes all the time. You know.
In fact, when the Torah was written, the only and only, I guess, individual who was written into it was Moshe Rabbeinu. Everyone else's story kind of like was not written. So he was from the beginning on the blueprint of the world. He was that important.
Well, I don't know. There's many tzaddikim written in the Torah, but Moshe wrote the Torah. Moshe did write the Torah, and you're right that most of the Torah, from this parsha until the end of the Torah, Moshe appears in every single parsha. There's one parsha where his name doesn't appear, but It says you. It doesn't say his name. They're still talking about it. That's
He
Parshas
was
Kitsav.
the greatest prophet who ever lived, right? He is the only one who saw Hashem's face, I guess, or whatever.
Moshe had conversations with Hashem like two people speak to each other. Number one, most prophets, all the other prophets did not have that kind of conversation. They saw visions, they had dreams, they heard voices, but a conversation they didn't have. And also Moshe, almost at will, was able to summon up Hashem's presence, so to speak, and have this conversation almost at will. So Moshe's level.
Rabbi, sorry.
Go
Yeah.
ahead. Ashley,
Sorry, my recollection is that one of the 13 Ikrim is to believe that Moshe is the only, like, I don't know, the prophet that who could speak to Hashem, right?
you're absolutely correct. One of Rambam's 13 principles of faith is that we must believe that, first of all, in the concept of prophecy, but second, that Moshe was the greatest prophet and that his prophecy will never be changed by any other prophet, even if a prophet is a true prophet. No prophet can change Moshe's prophecy. If Moshe says to do a certain thing or not to do a certain thing, nobody can come after that and say, Hashem gave me a different message. No such thing. That's what Rambam says. You're absolutely correct.
Then the question is, why was he, when Hashem asked him to lead the Jewish people, why did he have to have this argument if he knew that, you know, he was the one and he also was the prophet? He knew he had to do it. He saw it. It's almost like Adam who said, Hashem, you set me up. He knew that. And then he has this like 12 days argument. No, I'm not gonna do that. Did he even have a
So,
choice?
the way I understand it from this exact talk that the Rebbe has is Moshe wasn't, so to speak, saying, I don't want to do the job. Moshe was saying, I don't want to do the job that you want me to do. In other words, don't make me an interim Mashiach. Don't make me a temporary Mashiach.
Oh,
If
I
you want to
want to be
send
the permanent one.
Mashiach, that's it. The whole kit and caboodle, the hook, line, and sinker. I want Mashiach, the full package, full everything, 100%, with all the upgrades. I don't want to have, today a little bit, tomorrow a little bit, and then you're going to send me an upgrade over the internet. No, I want the whole thing right now. And Hashem was arguing with him, and Hashem says, no, you got to go the way you are, and it's going the upgrade will happen in time. That's the conversation of Eke, Asher Eke versus the Eke, no, I will be what I will be, meaning there will be future upgrades, so to speak, Hashem said. And Moshe was arguing with that. Eventually Hashem said, that's my plan. I'm sorry, Moshe, it's not going to happen. And the reason, as I just explained from the Rebbe, is because the world can't, it's not in the world's best interest just to be given a handout. Hashem wants that the world should earn it. The world should rise to the level of appreciation and not just be given something just like that.
Can you
Downloads.
imagine a level of someone who gets to actually argue back and forth with Hashem and saying, no, I want this, I want that? I mean, you know, Abraham.
Moshe had a lot of, I would say chutzpah, a lot of, listen, at the end of the parsha, and this is the end of the parsha, Hashem balls him out. Hashem does give him a little bit of a balling out. He said, you're not like Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. They never argued with me. And Moshe says to Hashem, I'm sorry, but that's what you put me in that position. What do you want from me? I'm an advocate. I'm a lawyer. I have to, I have to, on behalf of my client. It's not just so fascinating. I mean, that's another whole fascinating discussion, that why would Hashem treat Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov different than Moshe? And clearly the answer is, as we're about to read, that Moshe was the one who not only brought gifts of spirituality, but also taught the Jewish people how to be on that level. Whereas Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, they brought a lot of people under the wings of Hashem's presence. That's an expression, tachat kanfei hashchina, under the wings of the Shechina. They brought hundreds and thousands of people, according to Rambam. But those people were not Jews. They were not elevated. They were glowing as long as the fire of Abraham was next to them. They could not be sent to a far-off place and have their own warmth there. They weren't self-motivated. They didn't have the turn, it's like the clock. that there's no battery in the clock, and you keep setting the time every minute somebody sets the clock. But if there's a battery, you don't have to do that. It works by itself. The Jew has a battery. That's our neshama. The non-Jewish world and the world that Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov influenced, they didn't have neshamas. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov had neshamas, but not all those people. So the vast difference between the interaction between Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov and their people, who they elevated, and Moshe and the people that Moshe elevated, which means us, the Jewish people. And because of that,
Rabbi,
they
I'm
had
sorry.
different things. Yeah.
Rabbi, so question. Maybe it's a super naive question, but you know how everything that's in Torah is for us to, you know, to learn to get lessons from. It's great. So, is it okay for us to argue with Hashem since Moshe was arguing with Hashem? I understand we're not at the level, but.
Natasha, good question.
Let me put. I'll answer you
Good
first.
question.
First, yeah. First, I'll answer
Is
you.
it okay for me to say
The answer. My first answer to you. My initial answer is: if you can have that conversation back and forth, yes, you can argue with Hashem. If, in other words, if Hashem will answer you, you could argue. Why not? Then you're on a level, you know. Until Hashem answers you, you're just talking to yourself, right? In other words, Hashem hears you, but it's like talking into the phone,
Right.
and the person's on
You
mute.
know, it's like there is that joke, like you know, like a Jew goes and prays, you know, at Kotel at the wall, and someone is asking, so how was it? He's like, it's like talking to a wall. So yeah,
Right.
if he answers, okay. If not, you're talking to yourself.
So the today we have all these beautiful analogies because of technology. So you're on the phone and you're talking to somebody, and that person's on mute. They hear you, but you don't hear them. So we're talking to Hashem. Hashem hears us. The question is, do we hear Hashem? That's the question. So, you know, if you can hear Hashem, then you can argue. What can I tell you? You're clearly on a different level. If Hashem is not on mute with you, and Hashem is, you know, the line is open, the line is open. So the big
Yeah,
tzaddikim,
sure.
the big, and to answer more seriously, the Gemara talks about the concept of Natzchuni Banai Natzchuni. It says Hashem is very proud when the tzaddikim push back and they cause Hashem to change his mind. Hashem says very proudly, my children have won over me. Look at this, they're so great. And another expression the Gemara uses is Tzadik gozer, a tzadik decrees, v'Kadosh Baruch Hu mekayem, and Hashem fulfills. So there is a concept, even till today, of the great tzadikim changing Hashem's mind. It doesn't mean they're arguing with Hashem, but they're finding a way to cause something to happen that it wasn't originally in the original plan. They're opening up channels. They're causing, you know, certain merits to be recognized where before they weren't recognized. I don't know what their mechanism is, the tzaddikim. They're fixing certain deficiencies, that's for sure. They're fixing cables. They're like, you know, after a storm and the electrical lines go down, so you call in the guys who fix the lines. The tzaddikim do the same thing. They fix the electrical cables and they allow the spiritual energy to flow. Sometimes the tzaddik tells you, check your mezuzahs, check your tefillin, give tzedakah, read Tehillim. They know exactly which lines, which cables to fix. So, what can I tell you? Do tzaddikim argue with Hashem? I wouldn't say they argue. I would say that they change a little bit the plan according to the way Hashem really wants. So, what does Hashem really want? Hashem really wants to give. What's stopping Hashem from giving? Our problems, the blocks that we put up. Tzaddikim know how to get rid of those blockages and clear the drains. They are the ultimate roto-rooter. They know how to
There was
open
this
up.
famous story with Baal Shem Tov Rebbe and this woman who came to him, and he changed the decree, and then do you
Yeah.
remember?
A
Yeah.
lot of beautiful, lot of many different stories where something was going to
But
happen.
then
Look.
he was punished, but then Tzaddikim himself was punished for changing the decree.
Yes, sometimes a tzaddik puts himself on the line, like Moshe did in this week's Parsha. Moshe got a big bowling out. Moshe, in fact, Moshe lost the status of being a Kohen,
Right,
according to
because he
Gemara.
said, I cannot speak clearly, and then he lost it to Aaron.
Lost the status to Aaron, to be a Kohen. So why did Moshe knew what he was up against, and why did he do it again? Because he wanted the advocacy for the Jewish people. So it's not easy to be a tzaddik, and it's not easy. And if the true great tzaddikim, they all said that I'm not letting Hashem, go until he sends Mashiach. And there's a beautiful story where they say there was a great tzaddik who said, "I'm not. When I die, I'm not going to go into Gan Eden, into paradise, until Hashem promises he's going to send Mashiach right away." So the tzaddik passed away, and he stood outside of Gan Eden, and Hashem made the Gan Eden bigger, so that where he was standing was Gan Eden also, paradise also. So.
Rabbi, very quickly, we learned yesterday we're going by the prayer book, and
Yeah.
in our circle we learned yesterday it kind of connects a little bit. I don't know if we so much have a question, but maybe a question. How when the Beis HaMikdash, the transferred Beis HaMikdash, was established in the desert, you needed to bring the scents, right? The different scents, and make this kind of like, Natasha, what is it called again? Like, so the Vaskurenia in what is it in English? And then so the Hashem would see the pillar of the
Yeah, the
smoke,
smoke. Yeah.
and then it would go in a straight line, and that's how the Jews would summon Hashem. That's how they would connect. I guess it was a portal, right? Portal. Here's the portal.
But it's not just the incense, but the smoke of the
And the
incense
smell.
goes straight up. Yes, it's true. But the ketores, it's called in Hebrew ketores. But the smoke of the mizbeach, of the altar, also went straight up. Both of them. But yes, you're correct. When through the incense, through the ketores, that was a very spiritual service that was burned, however, inside the building. The
How
ketores
do
was
we connect
never.
then? How do we connect to Hashem now? He used to
The
be like,
ketores.
that was the portal. You go, like,
Through
okay, it's fine.
davening.
Like, through davening.
That's why the davening was established.
Where is the pillar? Where do I go? Where is the portal? For me,
Look.
the portal is at
Why do you
the.
think? Why do you think we're asking for Mashiach to come? We're asking for Mashiach just so we should have more money. We're not asking for more money. We're not asking for less wars, even though they're all going to be good things. We're asking for this spiritual reality that used to happen. We don't have that reality today because of the blockage. It's a blockage. It's like, like a fog, thick fog. We want the fog to lift so we should see. But you're absolutely right. But having said that, the Chachamim gave us the davening, and they wrote this, they scripted for us the davening, they wrote the davening siddur. And through davening, we open up channels, plain and simple. The same way that the Kohen used to open channels by offering up the ketores, the incense, we open up channels by davening. It's not as powerful, it's not as clear, but it's channels. It's a little fuzzy, it's a little staticky, but it's still channels. And that's the second best thing until the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. So
Yeah,
that's
very,
the topic.
very powerful kind of lesson, how you can visualize and you can sense it, and then you connect physical to spiritual. And the prayer book talk about Hasidism and the how Kabbalistic
Arizal says
meaning. Yeah.
the Arizal who lived in the mid to late 1500s, that's just about 500 years ago, a long time ago. The Arizal said that in his days and forward, the main service is davening. Davening, opening up those channels. That's what we need to be focused on. Opening the channels.
Oi, wait. Does this count what we are doing now? Is this
Course
part
it
of
counts. Every positive thing. Look,
it
I just said from the Rebbe that even if a Jew shows up in a place and doesn't do anything, just is sitting in the place, that's already. Your neshama already has an effect. It's like literally like a taking a flower, a fragrant, a rose or a fragrant, other flower, and putting it in a room. Just by being in the room is perfumed. So the
Rabbi,
Jew,
I have to say, I apologize.
yeah,
I
go
have
ahead.
to say, Ina gets the most credit. She's trying so hard to elevate everything, including my apartments and people. You do get a lot. I say this like I'm,
Well, it brings me so
we
much
like,
pleasure, actually.
but jokes aside, always always makes sure that everyone knows about the lessons, and she encourages everyone to join, and she
So,
sends a lot of messages with the reminders. So as Ina mentioned, it's my birthday. Actually, my Hebrew birthday was yesterday. So a lot of blessings to you, Ina, and to everyone on this call. And thank you so much. And health and safety and happiness. And may we continue learning. And Ina, please continue encouraging all of us.
man. Listen, I did better than yesterday. I have two of my cousins. I have Ellen and I have Jana and Nicole. And I'm so glad they're like, it brings so much pleasure to me that they're able to learn and elevate themselves and get a little bit of clarity. So, and I'm talking to you. Robertson Slavy Wolf is texting me and she's, talking about prayer. So it's wonderful. Yeah, Natasha. Hello. I worked very hard to like get everyone out of my office. I didn't even pick up the phone. So the clients can
Let me tell
elevate
you
themselves.
something. You ladies have a lot of power. So more power to you. Good
And
for you.
Rabbi, thank you to you. You do everything with such a joy and such a cheerful, and you do it like from your heart. I'm seeing you
Yeah,
now.
but it's good for me. It's good for me, you know. I'm not, I only gain. It's all good for me. So.
Yeah, but this is in the middle of your day, and then you're sitting in front of the computer. You're not on the phone. You're sitting in front of the Zoom, and we don't even turn on our cameras. Now I did, and you can even see me. You're talking to the it's
All
like
right.
talking to the wall. But I
All
have
right.
to tell you that I think from this like a year and a
My
half
pleasure. It's my
journey,
pleasure.
it's a huge, huge milestone for us. And as I said, I treat people differently because of that. So thank
My
you.
pleasure. All right. My
Thank you
pleasure.
again. So I need to digest what am I going to say at your Shabbat table, Natasha.
And super quickly, Ina mentioned on the chat, I just came back from Israel, Rabbi, and your lessons, the Tanya lessons and partial lessons give us so much more clarity when people now talk. I understand things at a different at a different level
That's great. Good for you.
about the energy. A lot of people actually who understand what's going on and have knowledge and enough background mention energy, and now I understand it in a totally different way, thanks to you.
Good. I'm very happy to hear that. And as you study more, the more a person studies, the more you appreciate, plain and simple, like any other field, including Torah. It all builds. Everything builds up, builds and builds on itself. So keep going. Ladies, you're doing good. Keep going.
Thank you,
Thank you
Rabbi,
very
so
much.
much. Amanda,
And have a wonderful
Shabbat
Shabbos.
shalom.
Thank you. Enjoy
Shabbat
your
shalom.
Shabbos meals. And this Shabbos we have a by us we have a so community Shabbos meal. So it's always nice. We get
Well, we're
mostly
gonna have a joint Shabbos, God willing. God willing,
yeah,
this.
Baruch Hashem, we're celebrating with Ina's family together.
That's great. That's
Yeah.
great.
So only uplifting and good people with good energy. That's my favorite prayer now. Please, Hashem, send me people with good energy and good
Is
values.
right.
Yeah.
I
Thank you,
mean,
Rabbi.
right,
Good
ladies, all
wish
the
to me
best.
today. Thank you so much,
Bye-bye.
Rabbi.
Bye-bye.
Shabbat
Bye-bye.
shalom. Everyone,
Shabbat
Shabbat
shalom.
shalom.